Getting our kids involved in golf with Mike Mazzaferri.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Mike Mazzaferri runs the First Tee program in Reno, Nevada, and we'll talk to him about the First Tee, its origins, and what it can do for inner city kids and more. But I want to remind you, our podcast is brought to you in part by Bird Golf Academy. If you're looking for the ultimate golf learning experience, check into the Bird Golf Academy. And I apologize for not reminding you multiple times that as a Golf Smarter listener, you receive a 10% discount. So when you call the Bird Golf Academy, make sure that you tell Jay Ewing that you heard about the Bird Golf Academy on Golf Smarter and that you want that 10% discount that he's offered. And if you want to hear the full interview, you can go back and hear Jay Ewing, Bird Golf Academy, and he talks about the Academy, what they offer, and he makes that 10% offer. For more, go to GolfSmarterPodcast.com and click on the link to Bird Golf Academy. I've received numerous emails from people asking, how can we get our kids to share our love of golf so that we can spend more quality time with them? What other opportunities do you get to spend hours outdoors with your kids? Everything today is so fast-paced and hectic, and I'm talking about our kids' schedules, not just ours. Golf is outdoors. You can talk, laugh, have minimal interruptions. And what a lot of kids really love, they get to be competitive with an adult. Our guest runs the First Tee program in Reno, Nevada, and his name is Mike Mazzaferri. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you, Fred.
It's great to have you on the show, and congratulations. You were just named the 2006 Northern California PGA Junior Golf Leader.
Yeah, thank you very much. It was my wife and I were both honored to be named the recipients of that this year, and it came as a surprise. It was nice.
Oh, well, that's nice that it was a surprise. Is that something that's rare, that it's a husband and wife team that gets the name of that award?
Yeah, I don't know if it's ever even happened before. I know it's not happened in our section of the PGA, but it may have happened elsewhere in another section or nationally. But I think it's pretty rare, yeah.
So tell me what you did to earn that.
Well, I've been involved anyway, and my wife in junior golf and teaching golf for many, many years in the Reno Tahoe area here. And we started a First Tee chapter 2 years ago. And I've had kids in programming. This year we had over 500 kids in programming in our summer programs and our shoulder season programs up here. And we've worked on it 7 years, you know, trying to get it established. And it was a difficult process finding a home for it. And we finally did and got it going. And it was nice that the PGA recognized us for hanging in there and getting it going.
Have you been instructing kids for a while, but have you also instructed adults?
Yeah, both Denise and I have. I've been teaching since 1984, and many, many adults, players of all levels, from beginners all the way up through, you know, competitive players, college level, professional level.
And what made you change your focus to coaching kids?
It's kind of a long story, Fred, but
it's a 30-minute interview. Let it go.
One of the when I ran the city courses for the city of Reno, we had a couple muni golf courses, and during the summertime, I like to hire athletes from the university, kids that play football, other sports than golf, anything that I could do to help the college kids. I did, and one year I hired a young man. His name was Diedrich Holmes. He was an All-American running back from the University of Nevada. And he got so hooked on golf, I helped him get into the golf business. He actually went to work for the USGA after he got out of school.
Wow.
And eventually, Diedrich went on to become the director of life skills for the First Tee down at the World Golf Village in St. Augustine. And Diedrich then, of course, talked me into the First Tee, and I was involved from the beginning, and so we tried for a number of years to establish a chapter, mostly at Diedrich's urging, and I got to know a little bit about the program and liked it a lot, and that's why we went where we went.
Let's talk about the First Tee program. Can you give us an introduction to it, please?
Yeah, the First Tee, it's a national organization based out of the World Golf Village in St. Augustine, Florida, And it was established in 1998 after Tiger won the Masters. Pretty smart guy. The manager at Augusta National at the time, Roger, gosh, I'm drawing a blank here. I'll think of it in a second. The manager at Augusta said, hey, we want to do something for Tiger's going to drive a lot of kids to have the desire to want to learn this game. And in the inner cities particularly, these kids are not going to have the opportunity. So Augusta National came up with $5 million and took it to the, at that time, the World Golf Foundation and challenged them to do something for these kids. And the World Golf Foundation then put their heads together with all the leaders from the various groups, the PGA Tour, the PGA of America, LPGA, and obviously Augusta National, and came up with the idea of the first tee. And the first tee was born. They raised about $50 million in a very short time and embarked on this quest to bring golf to every kid in the country, let alone kids that are underprivileged or in need, but, you know, all the kids. And the program's really focused around life skills. It teaches honesty, integrity, sportsmanship. They have 9 core values that they build these life skills around: respect, confidence, responsibility, perseverance, courtesy, and judgment. I think that you can tell I've been teaching it. I know all 9 off the top of my head. But the golf is really the bait to get these kids into a program that teaches these life skills. And, of course, the desire is for them to become lifelong golfers and, you know, a lifetime sport like golf.
Lifetime spenders.
Yeah. You know, I think the true solution to growth of the game, you've heard that buzzword a lot, you know, in the golf industry recently, is the children. You know, teach the next generation how to play golf. And not only is this a great program to teach them golf, but it teaches them other things that they can use in their life that more than the golf, obviously. So.
Yeah, it's. I used to do some work with Major League Baseball teams, and I always heard them talk about, if we can get them hooked when they're 5, we've got them for life.
Yeah, yeah.
First tee is quite admirable in what it's trying to accomplish, and they have obviously a lot of money behind it, and it's grown really fast. If it only started in 98, and now there's first tee programs in all parts of the nation.
Yeah, there's about over 200 chapters, and last year alone they had over 600,000 kids in programming nationwide.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, and it's we've grown fond of the program, and you know, and each chapter has their own little twist on it or their own, you know, input, and all the chapters are similar yet different, you know, depending on the region. But it's been very exciting to learn and grow with it.
So how do you compete with basketball, okay? Because you clearly, you know, baseball, the numbers are going down as far as participants because you just can't have a pickup baseball game. And basketball, it just lends itself to being a street game and getting to the inner city kids. How does golf get in there and convince the kids that it's cool?
You know, it's changing. We have a program called Target that we take into the schools here, and you know, it's the because of Tiger Woods, I think golf is kids think of golf differently than they did 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. Even you know, I played high school golf back in the 70s, and you know, golf was really treated at that time as not a sissy sport, but not a recognized sport, if you will. You know, and I played basketball and golf in high school, and golf not that many people played, but Tiger coming along has almost put the cool factor back into the golf.
Oh, absolutely. He's poster boy of cool.
Sure, and people want to be like him and dress like him. And you know, this program, I think, will teach this next generation of golfers, not only golf, like I said, but, you know, give them some life skills. And we've had really great results with the program up here. We've had parents call us, and, you know, you get that phone call, and the parent says, "What'd you do to my kid?" And you know, I always pause.
It's like, what do you mean?
it came home, and you know, my thoughts are going elsewhere. And the parent says, "Well, he came home and made his bed and cleaned up his room, and all of a sudden he's nice." You know.
Oh well, it was the drugs.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just every lesson we have, there's a golf skill involved, but there's also, you know, it starts out with the little kids really just introducing themselves, making eye contact, shaking someone's hand. And it's impressive when a 6 or 7, 8-year-old does that.
Yeah. I had a kid who wrestled in high school, and the thing that most impressed me about the lessons that he learned, it started with a respect for the sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it grew from that, and he changed. Mm-hmm. He changed. And once he had that respect and could look somebody in the eye and had to shake the hands of the opposing coach after the match was completed.
Absolutely.
It made a big difference. We talk a lot about on this program mental conditioning. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure when you're dealing with inner city kids, and Reno is not much different than any other major city in this country, you're going to have a lot of angry kids.
Yeah.
How do you convey to them the mental part of the game and turn that into a life lesson so they can understand it?
Yeah, I think the kids, particularly depending on their background, you know, you're right, you see some anger, you see some challenging kids through this program, and I think any kind of youth program you see that, depending on what you're teaching. But we build these golf skills into, you know, you mentioned respect, for example. We'll build a golf skill. It might be chipping. It might be, could be anything. But respect, for example, we teach them respect for the golf course, respect for their fellow competitors, respect for the operators of the golf course. You know, different modules and different kids, you know, react differently to it. Some kids, you know, you'll say, I want you to go in and thank the people in the golf shop for allowing us to use the golf course, and they'll say, I don't have to. You know, and you know, you have to deal with each situation, I think, as it comes. But you know, by the end of that particular module, we're hoping that they have a little bit of appreciation and respect for the golf course and the people that allow us to use it, and they can relate that to other parts of their life. You know, things that they do in school or do at home.
Not an easy thing to do.
No, it's, you know, it's very challenging at times, like I said, but it's real rewarding, too, when you start to see results. We had some of the high school kids we put through the program that are very competitive golfers and good golfers that helped us with the little kids. And we actually saw more growth in those older kids than we did, and saw them, the things they were doing were helping those kids personally as much as they were helping the little kids.
Yeah. I could see that. What are the ages on the first tee program? What does it range from?
Nationally, it's 7 to 17, and we're pretty liberal with the ages as far as if we have my wife says a mature 6-year-old, and of course I say, well, what's a mature 6-year-old?
Doesn't pee in his pants.
Yeah, I qualify that, but you know, it's pretty much 7 to 17, but we make a few exceptions.
Sure. Sure. And when you're on a team, and I've noticed this again with my own children when they were on swim teams, that they could be on the same team when they were 7 with a 17-year-old. And they would go to when they'd go to the market and there would be some kid going, hey, how you doing? It's like, who is that? He goes, he's my teammate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the older kids do, they take responsibility.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things, Fred, that brought me into this program, because the mental side of this is, you know, I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, at Ohio State's 2 golf courses, and they're very busy golf courses. And from the time I was in middle school all through high school, I worked at the golf courses. And a lot of these things that we teach, I learned. You know, I learned on the first tee when I wasn't working and I wanted to play, and they'd put me off as a single, and I'd end up with 3 adults. I'd have to introduce myself and play golf, and you know, you tend to mature a little quicker when you're around adults all the time like that. And that's really what this program teaches all the way through. You know, these kids are becoming more mature, more responsible, more aware of what's going on around them, I think.
Do you have a story you can share with us of a kid that you didn't have? I mean, when you first met him, it's like, oh, this is going to be a real challenge, but then the epiphany happened or something just came about that you went, yes, I did it.
You know, we've had a lot of success stories, I think. Probably one of my favorite stories is Diedrich himself, who runs the Life Skills Nationally. You know, when he graduated from school,
he was a football player. I mean, he was an athlete. He had
the background, sure.
Sure. And the discipline.
He went through a very disciplined football program here, but he had a choice whether to go to work for the USGA or Home Depot. And I said, Diedrich, if you never listen to me again, listen to me now. Go to work for the USGA. It'll be good for him. Not that Home Depot's a bad, obviously it's a great organization. They hire a lot of athletes.
Sure, but he wasn't talking about working in the front office of Home Depot.
Right. Yeah. You know, and
but so, I really want that apron.
Yeah. And he wanted to stay in Reno, and he ended up going to Far Hills, New Jersey in the middle of winter. And
well, not much.
If you're a Western person, that's kind of a shock to go to New Jersey in the winter. But, yeah. You know, we've seen some things with some of our older kids that have been kind of earth-shattering. We've had kids that have played in 16, 17. One boy went from, he was 16 last year, he's 17 now. He played junior golf and had a lot of behavioral problems on the golf course with language, club throwing. Oh, just not getting along with the people he was playing with, and just not being very respectful of his fellow competitors, that kind of thing. And we put him through the par level in first tee and then into the birdie level, and he helped us with the younger kids, and it's part of their training, these older kids. We make them help a little bit. And he started seeing things in a different light, you know, and all of a sudden now he's starting to behave in golf tournaments and playing much better, too, as a result of it.
Of course.
And, you know, keeping his emotions under control and really, like I said, having his eyes a little bit more open and being more respectful. And I think when you teach kids kind of some skills or almost some self-management skills like that, through their helping other kids, it sinks in a little deeper. It's easier than for them to learn it like that than for me at my age to tell them how to do it, because they're not going to listen.
Right, right. Well, I've frequently told friends, you know, your kids will learn nothing from your experiences.
Yeah.
They have to do it themselves to get the message.
Absolutely. And that's what we're finding out. An 8-year-old child is going to listen to a 12 or 14 or 16-year-old
sure.
child more readily than he would me, you know, or my wife. And we're starting, it's opening our eyes a little bit about teaching kids. And, you know, it's no wonder I think the school teachers are the bravest, toughest people in this whole country.
Yeah, and least recognized.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Do you ever have some of your kids going out and giving adults instruction on how to behave on a golf course?
It's happened already. You know,
has it really?
Yeah,
we had
a group of our kids, two groups actually, go down to Monterey and play last year, and they were a couple of families that went, but all the kids were in programming. They ended up playing at right next to Pebble Beach there, Pacific Grove, a little golf course there on the coast there in Monterey, and two of the kids ended up playing with, as a twosome, and they're 13, 14-year-olds because they had an odd number, and they played with a couple of guys from Canada. And before the round was over, they were teaching these gentlemen about course etiquette, a little bit of course management, and I end up getting a note from one of them saying, if you ever start a program like this for adults in Canada, we're in. You know, and the kids were very nice and respectful, but they brought a few things up about taking care of the course and doing things right out there. So that was a nice note to get.
Yeah, very nice. Congratulations. It sounds fabulous, and clearly it's rewarding. And the fact that you get recognized by the PGA has got to make it pretty special.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think none of us do things like this for getting awards. It's just like anything else. You know, I remember when I was a young man, my parents told me, look, we don't care what you do, we just want you to be happy doing it. And, you know, I'm one of those fortunate ones that we found something we really like to do. And
yep.
I love golf in general, but this has really got our interest, and, you know, I can see us doing it for a long time.
Yeah, same thing I tell my kids. I don't care what you do, as long as you're passionate about it, everything else will follow.
Yep, it takes care of itself.
Yep, really does. Yep. Hey, you know, we got a letter from a listener, actually a couple months ago, but I've been holding on to it, hoping that I got to ask somebody this question. Now that I've got you here, this came from Paul Stewart in Cameron Park, California. He says that he has two sons, one's 9 and the other one's 5, and it would be nice to know how to teach your children the basics. For example, best ways progression-wise, when do you teach the right grip? You know, they love to play with him, but he's not so sure on how to give advice and parents teaching kids sports is never a great thing, but help us out if we want to get our kids started in golf at a young age so they can be the next Tiger in our own eyes.
Yeah.
Where do we begin? How do we begin? What is it that we want to teach them? And what do we want to hold? Well, I'm asking too many questions at once. Let's just start with where do we begin?
Well, I think, you know, at that age, particularly 5 and 7 year old, you know, what I'd recommend to Mr. Stewart first is whenever the kids go out, if you start really trying to teach them fundamentals and golf mechanics at too young of an age, the fun factor goes away. And what's most important at that age is that they go out and have fun with their dad and their brother and sisters or whoever they're with.
I guess the single thing you'd want to accomplish is they want to come back the next time.
Right. You want them to look forward to coming and going out again. And so they need to have fun. And during your journey out there, certainly the grip and the setup, those kind of things, we're not real technical with the little kids. I mean, if we can get them to aim a little bit and hold it pretty close to correct and they're having a good time, we're not going to, you know, every lesson try and teach something specific to them. It's more about going out and enjoying it, learning some fundamentals, certainly, but over time and not real heavy, you know. And that's how, and I'd encourage him, you know, Sacramento has a wonderful junior program in Say Golf and the First Tee Sacramento over there, and talk to their local PGA professional there, wherever, you know, they play or whoever's close by. Get some good instruction for them. But we don't start getting heavy with the instruction until they're a little older, maybe 10, 12 years old, and maybe thinking about being competitive, you know, too.
Is the First Tee program something you can sign your kid up for, or is it something you guys recruit in the inner cities? How does that work?
There's a national website called, I think it's thefirsttee.org. Go on there, and it'll direct you, like in Sacramento. There's 10 First Tee chapters in the Bay Area alone. I think I have a list here, but
This program goes out actually globally. So
yeah, you know, just in our area, there's 10, but there's over several hundred of them nationwide. And, you know, I'd recommend the First Tee programs if you're near one. If not, gosh, contact your local PGA professional. There's hardly a golf course across this country that doesn't have some kind of junior program.
Yeah, especially in summer, they have classes and things.
Yeah, you know, and depending on your area, the YMCA, the different entities that may be around you, we'll be doing something. And it's kids do better in groups of kids, too. It's certainly nice as a family. I think some of the best days I've spent are golfing with my dad and brother. You know, some great memories and something we very much look forward to. But, you know,
that's as an adult.
Absolutely, it's as an adult. And kids like to be around other kids. And, you know, hitting next to another kid your age makes you a little competitive. You want to try and outdo each other. And those kind of things are really good for not only the growth of the game, but their personal growth, you know, as they mature and become golfers.
So I guess what you're saying is what your focus should be with your young kids when you get them out there is just, it's not about you, it's about them. And let them go out and have fun doing it. And don't worry about the score, don't worry about the competition. And as the years progress, if they still love it and they get into high school or something where they have an opportunity to get competitive, then let the coach take over.
Yeah, absolutely, Fred. And you know, I tell people, if you go to the park and play baseball with your kids and you're not a baseball player, are you going to try and teach them baseball? You know, but everybody.
Oh, come on! Haven't you seen Little League? Oh my God!
I've coached Little League, and that's why I like this First Tee program. You know, in fact, a couple years ago, walked across the field and told one of the coaches I was going to put him in our life skills program. But you know, I think if you go out and play with a bunch of kids on a ball field just to play, you're not going to try and teach it. You want to have a good time while you're out there. That's what it's about, and golf's no different. You know, and then get them into a different environment to learn and to excel. And that might be with their pro. It might be in an organized junior program, the First Tee, whatever. But and most all areas, once the kids get a little better, they have competitive organizations, too, that do nothing but put tournaments on. You know, up in our area, it's the Northern Nevada Junior Golf Association, and NorCal, it's the Junior Golf Association of NorCal. You know, and every section of the country has, you know, nationally there's the American Junior Golf Association. The USGA obviously has events, but, you know, it's more about the kids getting out there and having fun.
Well, kids' sports have changed so dramatically since the time that you and I were kids, where we could just go out to the park and pick, do a pickup game of baseball, and Little League meant you get to play baseball all day long. And I hate Little League. Little League, it's like, all right, go out and stand in right field, and maybe you'll get three swings today. You know?
Yeah, I've coached Little League and basketball.
I've coached basketball, too.
Yeah, and you know, I played all the kids when I coached, but unfortunately, it's not so much about learning anymore.
Nope.
Kids have the coaches out there, the parents that coach and the other coaches, really, it's about winning, you know, just like at the college level or whatever level you're at. You know, we forget that these are instructional leagues,
right?
You know, Little League and those kind of things. And
let them learn to love the game.
Absolutely. And, you know, the first year I coached Little League, we probably had more fun than any team out there, and we finished second to last.
Oh, I beat you. We came in last, but we had a blast.
We had a big pool party at the end, and it wasn't so much about, you know, winning the league. It was more about making good friends, and the parents all got along, and we had a great time.
Yeah.
And the parents all came to me and says, "You need to pick our kids next year. We had so much fun." And I said, "Well, don't we want to win?" You know, nobody cared.
Yeah.
That's really the way it needs to be.
Yeah, and I've had similar experiences that having more fun at practice, having, you know, and then focusing on the game when it happened was always much more important than the winning and losing.
Yeah.
And the kids, you know, look forward to going to practice.
Well, and you know, I was on a few teams as a kid, baseball, basketball, or, you know, different things I did. You really need to learn to lose a little bit to appreciate winning for what it is.
Oh, yeah. That's a great piece of advice.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you can't, if you, particularly in golf, we have a few young kids out here that are very, very competitive, very, very good, and they're used to winning every week, week in and week out in these local tournaments we have, and I've encouraged them to go play in regional and national tournaments because, you know, they can't win every week because they're never going to get to the next level.
And what does that teach them?
You know, it teaches them they become almost complacent in their practice. You know, you want to get out and get better, and if you win every week, it's a, you know, Tiger's a rare individual that whenever he plays good, he can win, and he's still motivated to get better,
right,
and change his swing and do, you know, changing his swing with Hank Haney and going through from Butch Harmon to Hank, he knew he wanted to get better. And he played, for him, not up to par for probably a year or a year and a half. And look what he's doing now. How many tournaments did he win in a row? He dominated this past late summer and fall as much as he ever has in his career, probably.
Yeah.
You know, but he's a rare individual. A lot of times you got to go out there and get clobbered a little bit to light that fire to get better.
I remember asking a major league ball player, a guy named Carney Lansford, played third base, Red Sox, Oakland A's, and asked him once if he was the best player on his little league team each year. And he said, "No, I was the one that worked the hardest."
Mm-hmm.
And how many times do we come across kids as coaches that are just the naturally gifted athletes? They're the stars all the way through, and they burn themselves out because it's just not challenging. They don't care. They don't.
Yep.
They don't get their gift.
Yep. Yeah.
It's all about working hard and appreciating what you're doing. So I think the idea of learning to lose is not a terrible thing.
No, no, definitely not. It's, and I've seen that, you know, through my own playing basketball, playing golf, these kind of things. But we've all competed against people that are gifted that don't have the motivation as, you know, somebody else who works really hard, you know, for example. And it's rare as a coach and to see somebody come along and, you know, want to have the desire to get better and better and better, and they're already good, you know, or they're already very competitive. Those don't come along very often, and that's why only a handful of people get to play professional sports, because it's not enough to be gifted and athletic anymore. You've got to work hard, too.
What do you think for young kids of miniature golf or putt-putt golf, whatever you call it? Do you think that could help or get them interested?
It can. You know, I think once again, Fred, it's something that's fun that you can do as a family, and I know my kids, even my youngest is 14 now, and he's a competitive all-star baseball player. He's a recreational golfer, which is fine with me, and a basketball player, but he loves to go do putt-putt.
Cause really?
Yeah, you know, it's something we can do as a family, and we get competitive, you know.
Of course.
And you know, I think real golfers look at putt-putt and these kind of things as not golf, but you know, you gotta remember there's a fun factor there too, and you know, sometimes it's easier to take a 7 or 8 year old around 18 holes of a putt-putt course than it is to try and get them around a golf course.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about an hour versus even mm-hmm. if you take them out for 9 holes, it's still a couple of hours, and trying to maintain the kids' attention for that length of time.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it on a weekly basis. But
no. Well, also the frustration level of mini golf versus a 9-hole course is way down, and it could keep them more interested.
Yeah.
They'll see success.
Yeah. And I think some of these kids we see, particularly from, you know, some of the lower-income neighborhoods and these kind of things, these kids just don't have a lot. And some of these kids, all they need to do is have a little success at something to inspire them. If they think that they can do it, and taking them to putt-putt, you know, they might only make 1 3-foot putt, but that might put it in their head that, hey, I can do this. You know, and that's enough confidence or enough of, you know, put that's enough bait, if you will, to get them to go for more, you know. And sometimes that's all it takes.
And the key is to get them to want to go for more.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the first tee program, that's why I like it so much. It's really about the golf and having fun playing golf, but it's more than golf. You know, like I said, we're keeping them coming back for more, which the more we can keep them coming back, the more we can enrich their lives and teach them other things.
Your wife also is an instructor of kids and adults.
Uh-huh.
And works with you on first tee?
Yeah, she's a PGA member, actually. Been a pro a year longer than me. And she's...
Does she beat you?
You know, we were recently in Mexico. We do a large golf group to Mexico every year for a couple weeks from Reno. We charter an aircraft and have some tournaments down there. In Mexico, in 14 days, we played 10 times, and I beat her 4 times. She beat me 4 times, and we tied twice. So that was how we ended the year. So there's a lot of talk about next year's already. But we, more than anything, we enjoy playing with each other.
Well, we would like to have her on the program as well.
Great. Denise is a very experienced instructor and worked with some major golf schools, worked with an all-women's school. She's done all kinds, and she's really sunk her teeth into this first tee thing. And not just first tee, but the kids. You know, it's really about, like I told the PGA when we accepted our award, it's about the little people. That's what makes it all worthwhile.
Got to love the Lilliputians.
Yep.
Well, Mike, I want to thank you for spending time with us, talking to us about the First Tee program and for being on the program. But even more, I want to thank you for the work that you do with our kids.
You're welcome, Fred. It was fun to talk to you a little bit about golf. And anytime you want to talk golf, you know where to find me. Take care.
Golf Smarter now presents Nick's Picks with Kenny Nicholson, sales manager for EdwinWattsGolf.com. Kenny keeps us up to date with reviews of new products and new product development. Nick's Picks is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968.
Hi, Kenny.
Hi, Fred. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thank you. And you?
I'm doing absolutely fine myself, thank you.
I'm glad to hear it. I'm also glad to say, and I'd like to thank you and the folks at Edwin Watts Golf, that you have just committed to being with Golf Smarter through the end of 2007.
It's our privilege to be associated with you.
Heck, it's an honor to have you part of it. And just to let our listeners know, that means we're going to be around for at least another year. So it's great news for everybody. That means great stuff to give away, great discounts, and great information. So thanks a lot.
We're happy about it too, Fred. Thank you.
And let's talk about great information. You know, I just want to remind everybody that we got to Edwin Watts Golf because I noticed on the website of Edwin Watts Golf, there's a section there called Nick's Picks, where you review equipment as it comes in. So if anybody ever wants to refer to something before they even ask you, go to Nick's Picks at Edwin Watts Golf and see what Kenny's been reviewing recently. And you can go through his archives as well as the podcast archives. But you can go through his archives and see what he's reviewed. And so today in Nick's Picks, we're going to review something that is just being written about right now.
Well, there's a lot of talk about square-headed drivers. And a buzzword for at least the next year is going to be MOI, or moment of inertia. We had mentioned it briefly in a previous show that we did, but I want to try to touch base on that a little bit and give you an idea of what they're talking about there. What they've done is, instead of the traditional pear-shaped type driver, they actually look square for the most part when you look down at it, and more so even from the bottom of the golf club. What that's enabled them to do is move more weight on the back side of the club towards the heel and the toe area. And what that has done is it's created a higher moment of inertia. And what that does, just to give you an idea, is it's less horizontal and vertical twisting of the golf club. So if you hit the golf club or the ball high on the club face, you're going to have horizontal twisting of the golf club, where it's actually going to increase loft, and vice versa if you hit it low. And if you hit it out on the heel or the toe, you're going to have twisting that way as well. So if you hit a ball towards the toe, you're going to have a little more left to right spin because the club face is going to open a little bit more and cause you to slice the ball, and vice versa if you hit it on the heel. By moving the weight back and out as far as they have, they've created a more stable golf club. So off-center hits, you're not going to have as much vertical and horizontal movement of the club face. In essence, you're going to have a straighter ball flight. The geometry of the drivers has changed so much this year. It's going to be phenomenal. For the average guy, myself, I'm an okay player, and you just don't hit the golf ball on the center of the club face every time. So to have more forgiveness by creating a more stable golf club is going to help everybody.
These have not been put in the marketplace yet. Is that correct?
They're being talked about right now. They're on our website. The ones that are out right now are the Callaway FTI and the Nike Sumo Squared. Callaway also has an FT5, which is for a more traditional type club face, and Nike has the regular Sumo, which is a more traditional type club face. But those looking for the highest MOI can go with the square-headed drivers. They will be available the first part of February. They're in our catalog for this coming winter catalog, and then they're also listed on our website now. The technology is going to really change the way the geometry of the golf club is made. They're going to eventually come out with them in hybrids and in irons as well, where they create a higher moment of inertia.
I guess these are going to be introduced at the PGA Expo coming up in Orlando.
That's why they're holding off a little bit.
Yeah.
You got to have something exciting to talk about at the PGA show, and if you go ahead and launch it now to everybody, it's kind of a mute point.
Right.
So they want to keep it out of everybody's hands until at least after the PGA show.
Has anybody on tour played with these?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, KJ Choi won with the Nike Sumo Squared. So they're on tour right now. Being used.
And he won with it.
That's correct.
Wow. Wow. So the reaction, you know, the reaction from the pros, and if there's success, that's great, and there's going to be people that follow. But what do you think the adoption rate will be on something like this that is so radically different as far as its looks?
I will say this. There hasn't been a lot of excitement on the hard goods side for a while. What I mean by hard goods is golf clubs in general. This has created a huge amount of excitement amongst the retailers as well as the reps for the companies. So I think it's going to be phenomenal as far as how the product moves. It's going to be perceived fairly well for the most part. The hard part is just going to be the size, the sound. They're really loud, I will tell you that. So it sounds like an explosion when the ball comes off the club face. That gets me excited. I don't know about you, but I think it's going to be really, really good for the hard goods side of the business.
Great. Wow, that's fascinating. Well, you want to give one away?
I don't have one right now myself.
I'll keep bugging you. At some point, we'll give one away. Okay.
I'm sure we will.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, in the interim, what we've been doing in the last couple of weeks has been promoting the fact that Tour Edge has a great set of QL irons that are hybrids, and we're about to give a whole set away.
Lucky winner.
Yeah, we've been receiving entries for 3 weeks. We've received 122 entries this time, and a lot of new people who've been entering And I guess a lot of people got iPods for Christmas, and so they discovered us. And welcome to the team. Thank you so much for joining. I did receive one funny email because I received an email from this guy, and he was in one city. I think it was like Woodbridge, Virginia. And then I received another entry from a woman who was from Dale City, Virginia, but the address was the same. And so I wrote to him saying, I'm curious, is Dale City and Woodbridge the same place or two cities that share the same zip code? And she wrote back, Fred, my fiance and I listen to your show weekly, and we heard the last time a guy wrote in about the past giveaways claiming the winners are always in the middle. So we made our entries this time. We entered as Dale City and Woodbridge. It's the same place, but they're trying to get to both sides.
Up.
Yeah, well, you know. So I took the 122 entries. I sorted them in the database alphabetically by city. And you, my friend, get to choose a number between 1 and 122. You can pick either 1 or 122 or anything in between. And that will be our winner of the Tour Edge QL Irons. And the number is?
Since we got that many entries, I'm going to go high. I'm going to say 110.
110. The winner is a new listener, and it is Tim Epps of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Awesome. Congratulations, awesome. Tim.
Hey, Tim. That's great. Wow. All right. Now let's give something else away. We're going to do another three-week drawing, let people catch up here, which means the deadline will be on February 5th, and we'll do the drawing on February 6th. And what are we going to give away now, Kenny?
Well, since we got the Tour Edge irons, let's give away a Tour Edge stand bag this time.
Okay. Well, you know what? Tim, you're going to have to go out and buy your own stand bag. Let someone else have a chance.
I agree.
Okay. So the Tour Edge stand bag. To win, send an email with the subject stand bag, Tour Edge. You can put them either way you want, but make sure you get stand bag in this time. Send that email to pickme@golfsmarterpodcast.com. And as always, I request that you include your email address and your name and shipping address so that when you win, we know where to send it. And as we've been talking about for the last couple months, if you need to purchase anything in the golf world, you know they have it at Edwin Watts Golf. Go to golfsmarterpodcast.com, click on the Edwin Watts Golf banner, and it'll take you to our own page at Edwin Watts Golf, and it'll explain to you that you'll receive 10% off of any purchase that you make, plus you'll get free shipping. Of course, there's some restrictions that apply when it makes for that 10% off, but you will get a great discount, and you will get free shipping. So we're guaranteed to save you some money because you're a Golf Smarter listener. Kenny, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Fred. Have a good day.
Hey, I just want to give you a heads up, and I'll remind you about this again over the next few weeks, but I'm going to be in Miami Beach at the NFL Experience for Super Bowl. So if you happen to be living in Southern Florida or are coming down for the Super Bowl because your team is in it or you got a pair of corporate tickets or you just love football, stop by the NFL Experience. It's going to be in the parking lot of the stadium. It's a huge football theme park that's going on there. And look me up. I'll be at the Fantasy Play-by-Play attraction. And please stop by, introduce yourself, and say hello. As always, we close with a quote that is submitted by you. And this week's quote comes from Nate Timberlake of Cleveland, Ohio. He claims to be the driver from Cleveland who wanted to win the Cleveland Driver. Thank you, Nate. He doesn't know where this quote comes from, but he loved it anyway, and he says it goes like this. A gimme can best be defined as an agreement between two golfers, neither one of whom can putt very well. Quotes, comments, or suggestions, please send your email to Fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com.